This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on November 30th, 2006. Should you have questions after listening to this recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
I'd like to convene the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for Thursday, November 30th, 2006. Chairman Toner is unable to be with us today, and so I will be chairing the meeting in his stead. Hopefully all will go well. Glass. We'd like to begin with the correction and approval of the minutes. Commissioner Mason.
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of the minutes of an open meeting of Thursday, November 9, 2006, as set forth in Agenda Document 0675.
Thank you. Commissioner Mason has moved for the approval of Agenda Document 06-75. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? Madam Secretary, the motion passes by a vote of 5-0. The second item on our agenda today is a best efforts policy statement. Commissioner Bonspakovsky.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Although you're moving so quickly, I wasn't quite ready. First of all, I want to commend my fellow commissioners and also our staff, particularly in OGC, for all the work that was done on not just this, but all the other policies we're going to be considering today, which all are an effort to improve the efficiency of how we carry out our enforcement job. This best efforts policy is a proposal to modify our enforcement policy with respect to the best efforts defense. Currently, our policy has been to only allow this defense when a committee fails to obtain certain contributor information that they need for the reports that they file with us. That's in our regulation 104.7B. However, the statute itself provides, and I quote, when the treasurer of a political committee shows that best efforts have been made to obtain, maintain, and submit the information required by the Act for any report, basically, then they're considered to be in compliance. What this proposed change is going to do is to give effect to the full statutory language and not just a part of it. We had a lawsuit about this sometime back, a case called Lovely versus FEC, in which a federal district court told the FEC that it could not ignore the broader statutory language and focus exclusively on one part of it. This policy proposal, I believe, if ultimately adopted after a comment period, will bring the Commission's enforcement policy into line with the court's proper reading of the statute and the statute itself. It outlines what we will consider best efforts to be, the considerations that we'll take into account, and I would move that we adopt this and put it out for public comment.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay. Hearing none, Commissioner Bonspakovsky has moved the adoption of Agenda Document 06-76. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Madam Secretary, if you can record that Commissioner Bonspakovsky's motion passed by the affirmative vote of 5-0. The next item on our agenda. I'm new to all of this, and these things sometimes slip by. The motion is to adopt Agenda Document 06-76 and to make and to empower the Office of the General Counsel to make any technical and conforming amendments necessary to publish that document in the Federal Register. Am I correct in that regard?
Yes, it is, and I should have made that part of my motion, Mr. Vice Chairman, and that includes, if I may, one slight amendment, which is simply to, and here are copies for all the commissioners, is to take out part of one sentence on the first page, and this was recommended by the OGC. It's really, to me, it's a technical amendment, but they thought it was substantive enough that we should deal with it and then let them do all the other technical changes And as you can see, it's to take out the wording that the committee took all reasonable steps to properly obtain, maintain, or submit information reports to the commission as required by FECA. And it's down towards the bottom of page one. And this particular language was taken out in some other parts to make this uniform throughout. So if we could make that part of the motion.
Certainly. I'm sorry. I was sort of hoping all this would go smoothly, and already I've stumbled. The okay, so Madam Secretary, do you have a copy of this document as amended?
No, I do not.
Okay. You can assure that she has one. Then as so the motion would be to adopt agenda document 06-76 with the additional amendment made here at the table, that on the first page of the document in the second paragraph, the sentence with respect to 11 CFR 104.7A, that sentence would have the words that the committee took all reasonable steps to properly obtain, maintain, or submit information reports to the commission as required by FECA. Those words would be omitted from that sentence, and the sentence would then continue that the failure to properly obtain, maintain, or submit required information, and the sentence would continue as in agenda document 06-76, and that additionally the Office of General Counsel will be empowered to make any necessary technical and conforming amendments for publication in the Federal Register.
That's correct, Mr.
Chairman. I have it. Okay, good. With all of those, with all of that said, is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? Madam Secretary, if you could record that Commissioner von Spakovsky's motion passed with by the vote of 5-0. And then we will move to the third item on our agenda, which is a notice of proposed rulemaking on best efforts in the administrative fines program. And we have before us a late submitted document. Commissioner Mason?
Mr. Vice Chairman, I move suspension of our rules concerning the timely submission of documents so that we may consider agenda document 0677.
Okay. Commissioner Mason has moved the suspension of the rules to consider agenda document 06-77. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Madam Secretary, if you could record Commissioner Mason's vote, motion was approved by a vote of 5-0. This is an agenda document that was submitted by both myself and Commissioner von Spakovsky. Commissioner, would you like to speak to this?
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Mr. Vice Chairman, I'm going to move for the adoption of item 06-77. Your office did almost all the work on this. I want to compliment you for doing that. For those in the audience who are perhaps confused by why we, on the one hand, are adopting a policy statement on best efforts, but are also issuing a notice of proposed rulemaking, it's because we have one regulation that already exists on the best efforts defense. And the policy statement we adopted previously was our statement on how we interpret that existing regulation. We have a separate regulation that deals with our administrative fines program, and therefore we actually needed to change that regulation in order to bring the best efforts defense into it, because right now it's extraordinary circumstances defense. So again, I have anything else to say, Mr. Vice Chairman, except that I think we're doing the proper thing here, bringing our policy in line with what the statute actually says and the court case in the Lively decision, and I'll move for adoption.
Thank you. And just for my part, I think you said it well. This, to my mind, is a very small change in our regulations that to conform to the decision in the Lovely case. While we've got a number of different proposals today, this strikes me as the smallest of the changes. But I do think it does resolve some outstanding issues in that case. Any discussion on the motion? Okay. Hearing none. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? Madam Secretary, if you can record that Commissioner von Spakovsky's motion to adopt agenda document 06-77 passed by an affirmative vote of 5-0. The next matter on our agenda, number 4, is a proposed policy statement establishing a pilot program for probable cause hearings. We have before us a late submitted document. Commissioner Mason. Or actually, my apologies, they're two late submitted documents.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. I move suspension of our rules concerning the timely submission of documents so that we may consider agenda documents 0678 and 0678A.
Thank you. Commissioner Mason has moved the suspension of the rules to consider agenda document 0678 and 0678A. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Madam Secretary, Commissioner Mason's motion passes by the affirmative vote of 5-0. Agenda document 0678 was prepared by Commissioner Weintraub and Chairman Toner. Commissioner Weintraub, would you like to speak to the document?
I would indeed, Mr. Vice Chairman. And I want to say that I am delighted to be here as the proponent of this proposal, and I regret that the chairman is not here to join me today. Although this document is being proposed by the chairman and me, it reflects the ideas and enthusiasm of many people. We got comments and input from all the commission's offices and from OGC, and I want to thank everyone for their hard work in helping us craft this proposal. And I must, above all, thank Laurel Shanks, my counsel, who, without whose tireless efforts over the last few weeks, we would be looking at a blank piece of paper. The genesis of this proposal goes back a long way. 3 years ago, as then chair of this agency, I convened an unusual hearing. I think it was unusual for us and unusual for any agency to convene a hearing in which we invite people to come in and criticize us. It was focused on our enforcement process, and we invited members of the regulated community, members of the forum community, anybody who's interested to come on in and tell us what drove them crazy about our enforcement process and how we could do it better. And we got a lot of very constructive suggestions at that hearing, and I appreciate that people didn't come in with missiles and bows and arrows, but really did come in the spirit of constructive improvement of the agency, and I know that the staff viewed it in the same way, and I thought it was a really interesting experience. And to give credit where credit is due, I think it was originally suggested by former Commissioner Smith. We implemented a number of ideas immediately that year after we had the hearing, clarifying the roles of treasurers and what we mean when we name them as respondents, allowing people to get copies of the deposition transcripts, which, remarkably enough, we didn't routinely do before. Also that year, in an improvement to our enforcement process, we started putting our enforcement case records at the close of the cases. We put the public documents online instead of just making them available here in the building, where they could be summarized in some reporters out there, but they weren't really effectively available for people out in the world to get access to and to search, and now they're available on a searchable database, and I think that also helps to make it a more transparent and fair process. A couple of the proposals that we have on the table today, including the one that I'm talking about, were discussed at that hearing. And although it's not the first time that somebody raised the issue of our allowing oral arguments at the probable cause phase, that proposal actually dates back to 1982. It's been around for a long time, when the American Bar Association section of administrative law recommended it. And they cited in their report an earlier common cause study, which also recommended, among many other things, that we ought to allow more opportunities for oral argument. So this idea really has quite a long pedigree. The proposal that we're putting out for comment today, and I do hope that we're going to get a lot of good comments on it, I'd like to just summarize some of the key features. It's a pilot program. We're going to try it for 8 months and see how it works, and we can reevaluate it at any time, but there's a built-in provision that after 8 months we're going to reevaluate and see whether it's working for us. It provides respondents who are getting to the probable cause phase, and I think most of the people in this room are sophisticated enough to know that we trigger an investigation with a finding of reason to believe that there's a violation of the law, and then after the investigation, the more serious finding that the agency makes is that there's probable cause to believe that someone has violated the law. We don't get to that stage with too many cases. Most cases settle out for a variety of reasons before then. But it is a serious matter to have a government agency find you, that there's probable cause to believe that you violated the law, and a lot of people take that very seriously. And at that point, there's briefing back and forth. And after, under this proposal, after the briefing, after the respondents have already submitted their legal arguments on paper, they would have the opportunity to request, or actually they'd request at the same time they're submitting the briefs, an opportunity to come in and directly address the commissioners. Just come in here and sit in front of us at that table and make an argument. And we've modeled the proposal on the details of it on our Title 26 audit hearings, which already take place when people receive public funding and we order repayments. They have the opportunity to come in and make an argument as to why they don't really owe as much money as we think they do. We have provided in here that these hearings will take place expeditiously, so they won't slow down the process. And if somebody is not available to come in a reasonable amount of time, they may lose their opportunity to have this hearing. We're not going to allow this to become a way for respondents to just drag their feet and drag out the process. That's not what this is all about. Respondents, usually through counsel, will be able to make an opening statement. The commissioners, the general counsel, and staff director will all have an opportunity to ask questions. There'll be some give and take. These hearings will be confidential because they're part of our enforcement process, so only the respondents will be in the room and their lawyers in most cases. And at the end of the day, though, there will be a transcript made. The transcript will be available to the respondents, and if that becomes part of the agency's decision-making process, if we rely on that transcript on that hearing and making our decision, then that too will become public at the end of the enforcement process, along with all the other determinative documents. As I said, it's going to be an 8-month pilot program. Why 8 months? I don't know. 6 months didn't seem like it was quite long enough, so we thought we'd try 8 months. But again, that's something that people can comment on. In terms of one issue that I think the commission is not settled on in particular is what would trigger the hearing. People have to make a request. Some commissioners thought that any time a request was made, we ought to grant it as of right. Others thought it maybe we needed to have our typical 4 votes to trigger a hearing. And what this proposal puts forth is a compromise between those two positions that says, yes, we're retaining discretion over the over whether we're going to grant the hearing. We want to maintain some control over our docket, see how many requests come in, but it's not a high bar. You only need 2 commissioners to agree to hear you in order to get the hearing. Now, I don't know whether that's the perfect solution, but as I said, it's a document for comments, so you know, if people have thoughts on that, then we'd like to hear them. So why are we doing this? This idea has been kicking around for over 2 decades. Why do it, and why do it now? I think it's going to improve our decision-making. If we adopt this pilot program after a comment period, I think it will lead to a process that is more fair, more transparent, and better informed. And I think it's also going to promote conciliation. I'd like to quote briefly from some of the comments that we got from the testimony that we received in 2003 from one particular proponent of this idea. That was Jan Baron, who's one of our very experienced practitioners before the agency. And he's put forth 3 arguments for why we should do this. He said, first, such an appearance may illuminate certain facts and arguments that would otherwise go unnoticed based upon the written briefs. And I think, you know, people submit briefs and we read them, but we get a lot of paper crossing our desks. And sometimes when somebody's sitting there looking you in the eye and making the argument, it does have a greater impact. Second, allowing respondents to make oral arguments before the commission would promote a sense of fairness in the commission's procedure. This is something that I used to hear from my clients when I was in private practice, and it's something that I continue to hear from people who come before the agency, that they're not sure that the commissioners really hear them. They want to be heard, literally. They want to be able to look us in the eye and see that we understand their argument, and, you know, maybe we reject it, but at least they know that we get it. And the third argument is that At the probable cause stage, respondents are often so convinced of their position that they're set on litigating if the commission finds probable cause. However, a commission hearing might cause them to rethink this litigation strategy once they've been able to make their own argument to the commission, even in light of an adverse decision. By the same token, the commission may detect reasons for dismissal or an alternative settlement. Any avoidance of litigation would save the commission and respondents time and resources. And I think that's also true. Litigation is the least efficient way of resolving anything on our enforcement docket. It requires a lot of resources, it takes a long time, and it's frequently the timing of it is out of our control because it goes to the courts and then the courts will rule whenever the courts will rule. So I think there are, and I think sometimes people will come in and they'll make these arguments and they'll say, you know, they'll see from the looks on our faces, from the questions that we're asking, whether they're selling us or not. And I suspect some people will immediately walk out the door and collar the general counsel and say, okay, we're ready to settle now. We can see we're not going to win this one. So I think that this may, it'll make for a fairer, more transparent process. People will see what we're thinking. They'll hear what our questions are. And I think that it may well promote conciliation. Now, the objection has been raised before and recently that we shouldn't do this because it may bog down the process and slow us down, and we can ill afford to slow down our enforcement process. And I think this is not a frivolous concern, and it's one that I've thought long and hard about, because I yield to no one in my zeal and commitment to improve the timeliness of our enforcement program. But I think we can do this for a couple of reasons. One is that we have made an enormous amount of progress in the timeliness of the processing of our cases. This is something that is seldom recognized because I think the commission has a long history of not doing very well on this. There was a time when we used to lose cases on statute of limitations grounds. 5 years from the date of violations, we still hadn't concluded the case. And that was embarrassing, and the commission was justly criticized for that. But that was then, and this is now, and we don't do that anymore. It does not happen anymore. In the fiscal year just passed, that concluded on September 30th, by September 30th, we had already closed more than 80% of the cases from our 04 docket. Cases arising out of the 04 election that we learned about within 6 months of the election. Over 80% of them already done. That is a dramatic improvement over anything that this agency has ever done before. We're not only getting the cases done faster, we are getting higher penalties, tougher penalties. This is 06 was the fifth consecutive year that we had our lawyers negotiated over $1 million in penalties, and that's not even counting the admin fines and the ADR settlements. And it's going to be a record year 06 because we had our biggest penalty ever. We had the $3.8 million settlement with Freddie Mac, which was a real record setter for around here. So we have made enormous progress in this area. And that's why I think that we're in a position now to try something new, even at a risk that it might have an impact on timeliness. And I want to say that the reason that we are doing so much better is in part because the commission, from everyone in the council's office and every member of the commission, is united in the goal of focusing on this and has been for some time. But it's also because of the daily efforts of everyone in our enforcement division. I can't wave my magic wand and make the cases go faster. It is the day in efforts of every single person in our enforcement division that have enabled us to reach this point where we are processing the cases faster and we are getting bigger penalties. We're working harder, tougher, smarter, and faster than we have ever worked before in this agency. And these people don't get a lot of credit for it. They don't get to issue press releases. They don't get to sit here in front of the microphone and brag about the statistics, but the statistics do bear them out. And I'm very proud of all the hard work that's gotten us to this place. Now, am I satisfied with where we are today? Of course not. anyone in this building could tell you that I'm never satisfied. But we have, as I said, made enough progress in this area that I think we can do this. And I also think that it need not bog us down to have these hearings. It's interesting that in the 2003 hearing, we received mixed testimony on that point. Some people just kind of assumed, oh, yeah, this is going to slow you down. But the testimony that we got from the election law bar was that they weren't convinced it was going to slow us down dramatically. They weren't convinced that most of their clients were going to want to do this. And that's borne out by my own experience as a practitioner, which is that most people, when they come before us, it's because of inadvertent mistakes. They didn't realize they were violating the law, but they did. And my experience as a practitioner was somebody comes to you and says, I've got this complaint at the FEC, and you look at it and you say, you know what? They got you dead to rights. You're wrong. They're right. No, you didn't mean to, but you broke the law. The reaction that you usually get from people is, well, let's just negotiate the best deal we can and put it behind us because I don't want to have a government investigation hanging over my head interminably. So, you know, there's real reasons. There are a lot of reasons why people want to settle a case, move on, put it behind them, and that they wouldn't want to pursue this to probable cause. It's expensive to go to probable cause. You have to write the briefs. You have to hire your lawyers. And making the argument, you're going to have to pay even more for them to come in here and do it, so I don't think everyone's going to do it. And we're being very explicit in this policy for the first time, and I think this is another good thing that we're doing, because I think we ought to be more transparent in general about how we calculate our penalties, that there are risks involved in going to probable cause. If you settle early, if you cooperate, if you make life easy on us, we give discounts on the penalties. We've been doing that for quite a number of years, and we're being very open and explicit about it now. The members of the bar that used to work for this agency know this, but now we're telling everybody that folks who settle out early generally get lower penalties. If you want to push it to this point of a probable cause and a hearing, it could cost you. And the people that are, so I don't think this is going to be for everybody, but for the people who are so convinced that they're right and we're wrong and they really need to get in front of us and make their arguments, I think we ought to hear them out. So I am very enthusiastic about the prospect of doing something new. We don't know what the impact of this is going to be. That's why we're doing it as a pilot program. Nobody knows whether this is really going to be a drag on the system or not. But I don't think that we ought to be afraid to innovate because we can't predict the future. Let's try something new and see how it works. And I welcome all comments from all parties as to how to refine this proposal. But I hope that we can put this into effect soon and see how it works. Now, I know that, Commissioner, as I said, we've gotten comments from a lot of folks, and I know Commissioner Walter has some amendments that he wanted to suggest, and that's completely fine with me, and I suggest we incorporate them into the document without objection.
Okay. Further discussion? Commissioner Von Spakovsky?
Well, Commissioner Weintraub, I have to tell you, I agreed with everything you said. but I just want to make just a couple of points. I mean, we have a very complex investigative and enforcement process that's dictated by the campaign finance statute, which is this book I'm sure everyone has seen. It's basically an administrative proceeding. Now, I've been a lawyer for over two decades, and I've been involved in a lot of administrative proceedings. In fact, starting with my very first case when I was a third-year law student, and I represented someone in a Social Security administrative proceeding. I think it is a basic procedural right that the target of an investigation by a government agency should have the ability to appear before that agency to present his side of the story and his arguments on the law. Now, I realize that's not required by this statute, and this agency has been in existence for 30 years and has not done so. Well, I think it's time that we do so, and I think basic considerations of due process and fundamental fairness should have us put this kind of process in place. There's already been some criticism this would slow down our enforcement process or somehow undermine our role as an enforcer of the law. Well, by that analysis, you could easily get rid of a lot of the due process rights in our Constitution and Bill of Rights, and we could put in kangaroo courts that could dispense justice very quickly. Some people, I think, don't seem like they're going to be satisfied until
we are given the power of the Red Queen and Alice in Wonderland, so as soon as a complaint is filed, we can say off with their political heads. I don't know of any law enforcement agency, and I've now, this is my second law enforcement agency I've worked for, that goes to the point of prosecuting someone without first meeting with them and their counsel and getting their side of the story. I don't think these criticisms are even remotely valid. And I would like to point out, as Commissioner Weintraub does, that under the leadership of Larry Norton, our general counsel, this agency has made tremendous strides in increasing the efficiency of its investigations, the speed with which they are done, and increasing the case closure rate. And I have some great statistics. This year, it's not even the full year, when you consider our enforcement cases, our alternate dispute resolution matters, our administrative fines, we've closed 239 matters and have collected almost $6 million in civil penalties and fines, which is the most money this agency has collected in any full year of its 30-year history. We've closed 21 full audits, which take a lot of work and a lot of time. We've done 24 advisory opinions, completed 7 rulemakings, and been involved in 7 major cases involving litigation as well as other cases. As Commissioner Weintraub has pointed out, the number of our cases that reach the probable cause stage are very few when compared to our overall caseload, because the vast majority of the respondents decide to conciliate or settle their cases before they get to that stage. The commission can easily handle hearings on these few cases, and it will not significantly or even materially delay our enforcement process. I think this is going to be a significant improvement in our procedures that's going to lead to better decisions, and I think it's one that's, frankly, 30 years overdue. And I will support this completely.
Thank you. Further discussion? Commissioner Walter?
I just wanted to make sure that the amendment was included in the motion coming before us, and I wasn't sure if that actually got done.
It has not. I think Commissioner Weintraub is not going to make that motion.
Yeah.
Commissioner Weintraub?
I'm happy to make that motion, which I think is going to lead us to better informed decision making. And who could ever criticize an agency for wanting to be better informed when the decision makers make their decisions? I move that we adopt agenda document, the agenda document 0678 as amended by 0678A. That we publish this document in the Federal Register, seek comment, and I hope we get a lot of good ones.
Thank you. So, Madam Secretary, Commissioner Weintraub has moved the adoption of Agenda Document 06-78 as amended by Agenda Document 06-78A to empower the Office of General Counsel to make such technical and conforming amendments as necessary to publish in the Federal Register. Discussion on the motion? Commissioner Walther?
Briefly, I just echo what Commissioner Weintraub said and congratulate her for her steadfast devotion to better enforcement and fair enforcement. I know historically I learned a lot about her when I first came on the commission. That's been her passion. It's been nice to see some of this come to fruition while I'm here. I was surprised when I got here that we didn't have a process like this. But I've spent 37 years practicing law, mostly in litigation, and it does seem to me to be a fundamental aspect of any agency that enforces to provide both transparency, fairness, and to a large degree the appearance of fairness, to provide an open forum at a certain important stage, as we're now going to do eventually in connection with this. And hopefully it'll be more than for a period of 8 months. And also want to congratulate the Office of General Counsel for the changes that have been made and the improvements and the quality of the work that I've seen since I've been here. I think it's been great, and openness to change, and I think we'll see a much better process here. I think most of you who watch this agency can see kind of a renaissance taking place in the last recent several months, and hopefully that'll continue. Another major reason for me having practiced law all those years is to learn the hard way, in some degrees, it's some of your best lessons, that you never want to give up a chance for an oral argument, because it's so often the case that well-meaning judges miss an issue, don't get a chance to ask the right question, don't get a chance to phrase it right. What it means to me is that I think we'll do a better job as commissioners if we give the opportunity to people to express their views in their own way on important points. And so, I look forward to initiating this process, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
Further discussion? Hearing none, we'll call the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Madam Secretary, if you can record the Commissioner Weintraub's motion passed by affirmative vote of 5-0. The next item on our agenda is a sua sponte policy, and we have a late submitted agenda document. Commissioner Mason.
Mr. Vice Chairman, I move suspension of our rules concerning the timely submission of documents so that we may consider agenda document 06-79.
Commissioner Mason has moved suspension of the rules to permit the consideration of agenda document 06-79. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Madam Secretary, the motion passes by a vote of 5-0. We have on the record here, Mark Schottweiler and April Sands to present this document. And I see Ms. Sands here at the table.
Thank you.
Please.
Good morning. Before you is the proposed policy statement regarding self-reporting of campaign finance violations or sua sponte submissions. Self-reporting of violations typically allows respondents to resolve their civil liability in a manner which has the potential to reduce the investigation burden on both the commission and themselves, demonstrate their acceptance of organizational and or personal responsibility and commitment to internal compliance, and conclude their involvement in the commission's enforcement process on an expedited basis. This proposed policy statement clarifies the Commission's policies and procedures regarding self-reported violations of the Act and Commission regulations, and announces the availability of a new fast-track resolution procedure that will be available under certain conditions. The Commission seeks to provide appropriate incentives for respondents to cooperate and assume responsibility for their actions. As a result, this proposal also outlines the criteria the Commission will use when considering whether to reduce the civil penalty that is sought from a respondent. The Commission is seeking comment on this proposed policy statement and has set January 29, 2007 as a deadline for submitting such comments. I'm happy to discuss any questions or concerns you may have.
Sands? Any discussion on the matter? Commissioner Mason?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank the counsel's office for working long and hard on this. This is another item that's been kicking around for a long time. Particularly to note that this rather compact little document was considerably larger at one point, and for good reasons. That the counsel's office went through very comprehensively and looked at what we had actually done with sua sponte submissions, and a lot of the complaints we got from outside counsel, I think, if we felt at liberty to sort of put all of our internal procedures and considerations on the record, would have been significantly satisfied. But we wanted something that was compact enough for people to grasp easily and that really focused on the respondent side rather than the internal side of the matter. And so we had a long road to get here, and I appreciate the work that went into it. I just want to highlight one element for which comment would be meaningful for me, and that's on the penalty reduction. And this was at the initiative of Commissioner Weintraub, and her recognition is one that I share, that one of the things the respondent counsel say is, well, what concretely can I get? You're telling me you'll be nicer to me if I self-report, but what can I count on? And I understand that request. At the same time, I'm a little reluctant to have a policy that gets us trapped in a structure which might not be appropriate in certain circumstances. That is to say that these submissions come in all shapes and sizes, all manner of fact patterns, and it's simply not possible to predict in advance every twist and turn. In fact, one of the things that strikes me about these sua sponte submissions is that in almost every case there's something unexpected that happened that caused there to be a violation that was not uncovered. Somebody embezzled money. Somebody had some little side deal going. Somebody was seeking to do something perhaps for their own interests and not for corporate interests. There's all kinds of different things going on. And so it really isn't possible, in my view, to structure a proposal that's simply going to let you go down a checklist in every instance and say, okay, we've done everything, and this is going to be a number that comes out or a percentage that comes out. So the proposal, short proposal, to set roughly a 50% civil penalty reduction with significant flexibility up and down is frankly the one that I prefer, recognizing, however, that the concreteness of the other proposal may be attractive. And I hope people will look at that and comment both on the specific criteria that are offered, whether those are the right ones, whether we've identified everything, if there are ways that we can build in sufficient concreteness to give people some sense of incentive to use this procedure, but reflect, but also retain some degree of flexibility. And just to illustrate with a particular example, in the criteria for 75% reduction, is the requirement that respondents took appropriate corrective action, such as disciplinary action against any persons responsible. Well, what's appropriate corrective action? What I don't want is a structure which has us arguing over the procedure and not over the substance. And of course, it could be any item, but my point is that that I don't want to, on the one hand, mislead someone who comes in and says, well, we put a letter in that person's file when what the person did was really bad. At least we think it was. And maybe the person should have been fired, or maybe the person should have been referred to the criminal authorities. And so I don't want to mislead anyone as to the judgments that we might make in that regard. And, as I say, I'd rather focus on the substance of the violation and on the substance and substantiality of the remedial efforts rather than on how they fit in a very precise way into these standards. And so I think the argument could be legitimately made either way as to what's best, and so I really want to highlight those issues as ones that I think are important for people to comment on as we settle on a final policy.
Further, Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. I also want to thank the staff for all their hard work on this and for all the commissioners who also participated. I think that, once again, we have a very collaborative document that we've produced here, and it will be even more collaborative once we get comments from folks. There are a few aspects of this that I want to highlight. One is, I don't want people to misperceive this. It's not meant to be a get-out-of-jail-free card. This is for true sua spontes. That's the term that we use here. If you're being investigated by another government agency, if the newspapers are full of allegations of your misdeeds, if you're racing to the FEC three steps in front of the guy who's got the complaint in his hand against you, this policy is probably not for you. I mean, if you come in and you're cooperative, then we're likely to consider that a mitigating factor, but that's not what we're talking about here. What this policy focuses on are people who come in and tell us things that we would not otherwise know. And the question in our minds was, what can we do to provide incentives to people out there in the world who know they've done wrong, not to sweep things under the rug and hope nobody notices, but instead to try to come in and get right with the law? And we want to provide a structure whereby their lawyers would feel comfortable saying, yes, if you go and fess up to the FEC, if you come clean with them, they will deal fairly with you. They will consider the fact that you've come in and told them something that they wouldn't otherwise known, and you'll get some benefit out of that rather than sort of hiding and hoping that you don't have any disgruntled employee who's going to, rat you out before the five-year statute of limitations runs in. Go on in, get yourself right, learn what you need to do to clean up your act, promise not to do it again, and the agency will take that seriously, that you're being forthcoming with them. I think it'll lead to a more fair, again, more transparent, more effective process. We'll end up with more disclosure of political activity because we will get people to come, if it works, if people agree that it works, we will get more people coming in and telling us when they violated the law than we otherwise would have. And I think there are two key aspects to this. One is the fast track procedure, where you avoid the RTB finding and come in and just come clean with us, and we'll negotiate a settlement agreement based on that. I'd like to hear from people whether they think that's a good incentive. Does that appeal to people? Is that enough of an incentive to make them want to come into the agency and tell us? Then there's the aspect that Commissioner Mason pointed out, where we are offering some fairly concrete benefits in terms of penalty reductions. There's a couple of different proposals in there, and I think there's concrete and more concrete. There's specific and more specific. In the proposal that Commissioner Mason was talking about, even that is far more specific than anything we've ever said before on the public record. That, you know, come on in, and if this is a legitimate sua sponte and you're cooperative with us, we're looking in the range of 50% off the penalty. I would think that would be an appealing incentive to somebody. There's another proposal in here, and if you look at page 8 and 9, we get a little more detailed about, you know, how these factors play out. If you do X, Y, and Z, you get a 50% discount. If you do, you know, really go overboard and do everything that we can conceivably think of to get right with the law, you might get as high as a 75% discount on the penalty. Again, these are options that we're considering, and we want to get comment on them and hear from folks as to whether they think these are good incentives. Because my goal in all of this and everything we do is compliance. I view this like everything through the prism of my experience as a parent, and we're all parents at the table. It happens sometimes that one of my kids will come to me and say, you know, I did something wrong, and I feel really bad about it, and I won't do it again, but I'm feeling very guilty about it, and I don't want to lie to you about it or try and conceal it anymore. And they get points with me for being honest. You know, it's not that I'm happy that they broke the rules, but they get credit for that, and I tell them that because I want them to come forward and tell me these things. And I feel the same way about the agency, that if I told my kids, well, thanks for sharing, now go to your room until you're 21, you know, they're not going to be honest and forthcoming with me. I think we do have to offer some incentives to people. They have to know they get some benefit out of this deal other than just the relief of clearing their conscience. And I hope that these kind of ideas will provide those kinds of incentives, because we'll end up with better disclosure and better compliance in the end.
Mr. General Counsel.
Mr. Vice Chairman, I just wanted to say a few words, if I could, about this.
Please.
This is an initiative that I was very interested in from my earliest days here at the Commission, and I took note that a couple of other federal agencies had done something along these lines, the Justice Department and the SEC, and it struck me that this agency in particular would benefit from adopting a policy of this kind to make what we do more transparent, particularly because our cases are all resolved in a conciliation agreement that is really just a contract between two parties. There's no order that's issued by the Commission that explains in extensive detail why we handled the particular self-reported violation the way that we did. And so this is really an opportunity to let the community know that we consider a whole range of things in evaluating self-reported violations and in weighing factors and in considering the benefits that ought to be provided at the time of conciliation. I know that there is some skepticism about whether it's worth coming forward and whether the Commission is really providing some benefits to the respondent. And I think this will help address that and convince respondents that in fact, there are any number of incentives. We have, for at least the length of time I have been here, doing many of the things we describe on the second and third page of the document. We have been refraining from making formal, knowing, and willful findings in certain instances, even where the available information would support making a finding like that. We have many cases where we've decided to proceed only as to the organization rather than as to various individuals where that's appropriate. We've done the reverse in other cases, and we've certainly included lots of language that indicates the level of cooperation. And we have substantially reduced the penalties. And I think that's been the least transparent thing of all, in part because, while I agree with Commissioner Mason that these cases come to us in all manner of size and stripe, some of the more notorious ones come to us because there has been a systemic and broad organizational breakdown, often running up to the very top of the organization, to the president or the board, and often involving what we consider to be the most serious violations of the act, coercion, conduit schemes, and the like. And so while the penalty may reflect some serious reductions, and while there may be other accommodations in the agreement, these sometimes are the cases that garner the headlines and are some of the more significant cases the commission settles. So I think explaining a bit more about how what I want to emphasize we've been doing to a large extent for a number of years, but making that transparent so that people can understand it better. And I think just to underscore Commissioner Weintraub's point, you know, money in politics has just simply exploded over the last number of election cycles. The size of our organization has remained relatively static. We don't have regional offices across the country. We're by federal government standards, a relatively small agency at 300-plus. Our Office of General Counsel is about 125 or 30, and we've got 60-odd people doing enforcement work. We can't be the cop on every corner. We're required by law to deal with every complaint that comes to us in some manner, and unlike many other agencies, we can be sued by complainants if we don't deal with it quickly enough or to their liking. And so I think that to the extent that we're able to provide some inducements for self-policing and self-reporting and promote that, it's a very important part of the entire compliance picture. So I think this is a very important first step, and I'm pleased we're doing it. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you. Further comment? Commissioner Lutz-Bukowski.
Just a couple of things. I certainly agree with Commissioner Weintraub, and I have to say, Commissioner Weintraub, if we keep agreeing like this, the political world in Washington is going to think the earth is tilting on its axis. Encouraging voluntary compliance by the vast majority of the regulated community is essential to the effective functioning of any law enforcement agency, so the agency can spend its time and resources on those who deliberately ignore or violate the law. This sua sponte policy is not going to weaken our enforcement, as I've heard one or two critics say. It's going to strengthen it because it's going to provide incentives to the regulated community to self-report violations and errors and to take corrective actions to make sure that those kind of mistakes don't happen again. As the general counsel said, I mean, we've mitigated penalties for years in many of these cases without publishing this policy. Increasing the transparency of our determinations and how we look at these cases helps both the regulated community and it enhances our ability to carry out our enforcement duties. In my experience, most members of the regulated community, the parties, the political committees, the candidates, they want to comply with the law. I mean, the publication and implementation of this policy is going to help them do that. Of course, we're still going to investigate, and we're going to prosecute all complaints and referrals we get from the public and other agencies, and we're going to continue to severely punish knowing and willful violations and other problems with the law. But there's no law enforcement agency in existence in the U.S. government or anywhere else, as the general counsel said, that has a cop on every corner. And we don't have the resources to find and discover every single violation of law that's occurring. So providing incentives for self-reporting is going to increase compliance with the law, and it's going to lead political actors to implement procedures and policies that both remedy those violations and prevent future ones. Without such a policy, the incentive is for people to instead hide and not report violations and hope that they can get away with it, which makes enforcement more difficult. And I want to note for the record, Mr. Vice Chairman, that although the chairman is not here today, he has been an essential part of the development of all of these policies, and I know that if he were here today, he would be voting in favor of all of them also, and I wanted to note that. Thanks.
Thank you. Well, I'm often reminded in these sort of settings of a quip which I've heard attributed to Mo Udall, which went something to the effect of, everything's been said, but not everyone said it. So with that, I'd like to note that you know, that I agree with a lot of what's been said today. We have under 400 employees working for this agency who are responsible for regulating the activities of over 8,000 political committees that raise and spend over $3 billion per election cycle. And so there's no doubt that voluntary compliance is the centerpiece of the enforcement of this statute. And then whether it's fair or not, there is a sense among practitioners in Washington that very often the worst penalties, the harshest penalties this agency assesses, are assessed against people who come in and self-report violations. And the thinking goes that is because people arrive, admit to violating the law, and surrender all defenses, and a penalty formula is then rigorously applied against them. And I think that what is clear today is that there is unity here, that is not what we're trying to do, and that is not the incentive system that we believe should operate in this area of the law. And the hard question that we've been wrestling with, and we are now framing for the public through the notice and comment period, is how do we go about achieving that result? And I want to underscore the comments of Commissioner Mason, because I think he highlights one of the great difficulties we've had in struggling through the drafting process of this policy. And that problem presents itself in my mind in two forms. One is, how concrete are we? Do we adopt a system that has a relatively clear and rigid set of percentage reductions for a relatively clear set of behavioral patterns, things that people can do and sort of check the boxes and say, therefore, we have earned a discount of X, Y, or Z? Or do we adopt something that is more or less clear, more amorphous, but that provides more opportunity for the particular facts and circumstances that present themselves, and frankly for innovation on the part of the people who are trying to remedy the violations and tailoring their reforms or their remedies to the particular problems that present itself. And we have struggled internally, and now it will be up to the public as well, to the degree they wish to comment, to struggle as well with what system is most likely to be effective, because we would like to increase the number of sua sponte submissions. We would like to increase the number of instances in which people who are become aware that their organization has committed a violation of the law feel that they really should come and make a sua sponte submission to this agency and anticipate that that the consequence of that will not be the most severe form of penalty. So the first thing I think that it would be very helpful to the degree that people could focus on is the question of how clear and specific are the guidelines we set forth, and how much of them are driven more on the facts and circumstances, with sort of ranges that can be applied in a more informal pattern. And the second question is, to the degree that we are setting clear standards, what exactly is the behavior that we want to be measuring? Whether and this has come up most clearly for us in a number of cases where organizations have found a particular kind of violation and then have begun a process of more thoroughly self-auditing themselves and looking more extensively, sometimes over several prior years, to see if they can find even more violations and see whether there are patterns or practices in their internal operations which did not comport with the law. But as a consequence, then produce far more in the way of potential penalties by being more thorough in their self-examination and reporting. And so so I think that to the degree that we get some sort of clarity from the outside community on those two questions, it will be enormously helpful as we work forward in trying to think through exactly what this policy should look like in a final form. Any other discussion? Seeing none. Commissioner Weintraub?
Mr. Vice Chairman, Mr. Acting Chairman, I would like to move that we adopt agenda document number 0679, that we authorize the General Counsel's Office to make whatever technical and conforming amendments are necessary, and that we send it over to the Federal Register and seek comment.
Thank you. Commissioner Weintraub has moved the adoption of agenda document 06-79 and empower the Office of the General Counsel to make any necessary conforming and technical amendments and to proceed to have that published in the Federal Register. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? Madam Secretary, if you can record that Commissioner Weintraub's motion is passed by affirmative vote of 5-0. This brings us to the last item on our agenda today, management and administrative matters. Mr. Stoltz, are there any items to discuss under that?
There are none.
Thank you. That said, that will conclude the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission of Thursday, November 30th, 2006. Thank you very much.